Okay. Well, it is Thursday, December 13th. We missed the 12-12-12, Ed, so this is 12-13-12, 2012. I'm talking with Ed Shadburn, a name that has been associated with many broadcast properties throughout the state of Kentucky and here in Louisville. And we're going to talk about his background and then his association with WHAS. Mm-hmm. But you had a lot of experience before you came to WHAS, Ed. Where did you start your broadcast? You're from Louisville originally, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And educated here in Louisville?
Yeah, Male High School. And uh-huh. then I attended Center College in Danville.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I started as the first radio job I had.
Oh, really? In Danville?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a college radio station or a commercial
radio
station?
No, it was commercial, WHIR. And
what did you do there?
Well, I was a part-time announcer.
All right. And, what does part-time announcers do at WHIR in Danville, Kentucky?
They announce part-time, but but we started out, I started out at 35 cents an hour. And this was 1946. And the station was about 8 or 9 miles outside town, and I have to hitchhike out there. They put me on the morning shift. I didn't get there and couldn't get there in time to open up the station, but so the engineer did that, and he made do for a while. But this was a time when every little small town wanted a radio station, and the FCC had began to relax. It used to be kind of a closed company, the FCC. The only big cities, but the ones that had the stations, but they relaxed the license requirements considerably after World War II, and everybody wanted one. And HIR stood for Highball, Isaac, and Russell, which were the three owners of the station.
I always wondered about that, what they stood for.
So that's where I got my start.
How long were you there, all through college? Or?
No, I didn't stay in school. I had a good friend named Jack Everback. Jack was from Lowell. We'd grown up together, and he was working for a little radio station down in North Carolina, and then moved on to Mobile, Alabama, WMOB. And so he called me and said they had an opening at WMOB for an announcer. Well, I'm, 35. I think I got a raise to 50 cents an hour.
By the way, was being an announcer always one of your desires, or did you just kind of drift into it while you were in college?
Well, he kind of sold me on it.
Oh, okay.
He said it's easy work. But I really had a big interest in sports, and I did a little of that while at HIR, but not much, as a part-time person. The situation came up that he called me and said they had an opening at MOB, and they'd start me at $68.50 a week. I said, there's not that much money in the world, so I dropped out of school. And that was a good experience. He and I booked a room together, had a little apartment, and lived in Mobile. And that was back when all stations had, the larger stations had network affiliations, which was prior to television. And I had the night shift, Jack had the afternoon shifts, and It worked out fine. We had a big time down there.
And you were in Mobile how long?
Almost, I guess it wasn't even 8 months.
Oh, really?
No, Betty and I were scheduled to get married in June when she graduated from Center. And about that time, we got married and brought Betty back, and there was some shifting going on. I'm trying to think who owned that station, but they were out of Lexington. They owned WLAP in Lexington, too. And some union problems. And I had never joined the announcers had a union, but I never joined. And management there told me, well, we're just hiring you on a temporary basis so we don't have to put you in the union. So you know how those things worked. And anyway, didn't get really nasty, but it was kind of, wasn't very nice. And so Jack's got an offer from, I think it was KLO, WKLO in Louisville. And so I turned in my resignation too and came back to Danville and as a full-time announcer. And I got to do some sports stuff then. You interrupt me and stop me. I don't want to talk too much.
No, you're doing great. You're doing great.
So then after that, let's see, a friend of Ben. You know, it's amazing looking back on my career how many jobs I had with tips from my wife's friends.
That was a good partnership in a lot of ways.
Well, it sure was. And she had a friend who lived in Paintsville, and they were putting a station on there at WSIP. And so I applied as program director, and I got it. Well, I'm not sure. Betty's beginning to catch on here. She'd like to stick some roots down somewhere. But the station was owned by a congressman, an ex-congressman named Housie Meade. And he was the only one-term congressman I ever met. He went to Congress and voted for Taft-Hartley. Now, this is up in coal country, so he lasted about, one term was it. But we really had a big time up there. They're marvelous people. And
you had exposure to Eastern Kentucky before, or is that kind of a different
Well, Betty
atmosphere?
Was from. Betty, oh, she was from Middlesbrough, yeah. But two important things happened in broadcasting about that time, or to me anyway. The first one was that the FCC came out and said you could editorialize. Prior to that time, stations were not allowed to editorialize. So the restrictions, the rules were pretty tough, but as long as you made time available for someone to reply to what you're saying or pushing, you were okay.
So this was in the late 40s, is that something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is about 1949, I think. And then, so we started doing some editorials, but they're all for, mother, and against sin. We didn't do anything really controversial. But what we did do was get this town behind a park that had a swimming pool. They had no public swimming pool in the park in Paintsville. And gosh, the Rotary Club got behind us and all this other. It was great, great PR.
Real community for the effort. Little,
yeah. And our first child was born there. She was born in the Picklesheimer Clinic in Paintsville. And I'm just kind of hopscotching around here. There was one other thing that happened to me there that I'll never forget as long as I live. They were putting different music licensing firms like ASCAP and CSAC and BMI were putting on these program director clinics in New York. So I convinced Housie to send me up there to one. I've never been to New York in my life. But it was good training for me. They did a lot of good things. Mainly, not so much how to talk on radio, but the procedures that you go through to get a program on the air. And at the end of the day, they said, we've got theater tickets here for you if you'd like to go to the theater. And we have broadcast. Milton Berle was just getting started up there then. And I said, got this guy aside. I said, I'd like to meet Edward R. Murrow. So they called over CBS. They said, yes, send him over. So I went over there about 4:30, introduced to him. We sat in his office while he put his newscast together.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't say much while he was working. And then sat in the studio with him while he was on the air. And his commercial announcer was who? Campbell Soup was his sponsor. I remember that. But anyway, then we went down and had a drink in the bar in the building.
Edward R. Murrow, wow.
And he was just about the nicest guy I've ever seen. Huh. He was from out west. He was from, was it Washington or Oregon? Anyway, Washington State, I think. And just a really down-to-earth person, but a good newsman. The last thing he said to me was, you're in coal country, aren't you? And I said, yeah. And he said, if you ever get a strike, call me. So I wrote him a letter and thanked him, and this was before he really got into television. He was just doing radio then. But for a 24, 25-year-old guy, man, I'm telling you, I was really impressed.
Yeah, well, that started I'm sure you had communication with him over the years probably, too, didn't you?
No, I didn't, mainly because of I was moving around so much. And He had, as you know, in his biography, he had real problems with the CBS management on how you should handle television. They were getting a lot of sponsor pressure from, in those days, they didn't know a whole hell of a lot about Nobody knew anything about television, sure, as far as that goes.
Getting started then and really cranking up.
That's right. And so I never talked to him again. Now, I saw him one time at a CBS meeting on the West Coast, but he was there in just a short time in and out, and he didn't visit with many people. But
are you a program director? Are you doing some on-air stuff also?
Oh, yeah, goodness gracious. Yeah.
Do you have a lot of network programs then, or was it all local stuff?
Well, no, we started out, we were just music, sign on and sign off. And then we picked up Mutual. And that was a big help, the news especially. But, you know, I opened up the station, did a 15-minute newscast. We had, I think, AP or UP, I can't remember which one.
Yeah, that's the teletype wire in the back. You can go take the copy off and sit down.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And, now, is Paintsville where you had your famous sports calling, your sports announcing
Lord,
experience?
Oh, Lord, yes, Lord, yes.
Tell us about that.
Well,
it's a great story.
The general manager was doing the play-by-play.
It's a local football game.
Local football game. And Paintsville was playing Prestonsburg, a big rivalry. And he didn't show. I was up in the booth doing the color. You know, the band is coming on the field and this, that, and the other. But he didn't show up. And the owner of the station was there, and he didn't know where he was either. And so he said, "You're going to have to do the game." I said, "Oh, my gosh." All I had was a program. But, you know, I knew most of the players. I'd gone out and watched practice on the Paintsville team. I didn't have any idea who Prestonsburg was. But I got along all right. I guess it was the second quarter of the football game, and a Paintsville kid intercepted a pass, and there's no doubt he was nobody within 25 yards of him. So he's sailing down the sideline, and I'm saying he's the 35, the 40, the 45, the 50, the 55, the 60, the 65. Well, I had him up to the 80-yard line before I realized what I'd done.
But they go down after that.
I called. Kaywood Ledford went to center with us, and he was from Harlan and knew Betty. He had a couple of dates with Betty. And I told him what I'd done, and Kaywood said, "Give it up, Ed." you know, he could say it all in very few words.
Sage advice, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that didn't end your career in Paintsville.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll just put this on pause. Yeah, we're okay.
I'm sorry.
We're no problem. Okay, we're back going again. So that did not end your career in Paintsville.
No, it didn't. And stayed on there. Well, it took a little ribbing. But,
I'm sure. You may have wanted to leave that.
Yeah.
How long were you at Paintsville?
A couple of years. Mm-hmm. Then Meade sold the station. And a fella came in there from Huntington. Excuse me, West Virginia. And one of those things where chemically we just didn't see eye to eye. And so eventually I just quit. I didn't have another job. And moved back to Louisville. Moved in with my mother, Betty and I, and my daughter Sue. And of course, Mom was just tickled to death to have us there. But I finally got a job at Wave TV in sales. And they were just starting up.
This
was 1950. Yeah. 51, somewhere along in there. And in the sales department, I think. Mm-hmm. And that was a real education.
Had you done sales? Did you do sales at Paintsville also?
First sales job. And boy, it was just, you know, they signed on. Wave was the first TV station in Louisville and in Kentucky, as far as that goes. And when I went there, they didn't sign on until 1 in the afternoon.
Have that test pattern up there all that time.
And then that's so people could adjust their sets, of course. And they signed off about 10 or 11, and the only network programming was on Kinescope. We were not interconnected. But it was a fun time. Things were just happening all the time. You know, this was...
What was it like to... because this is a new medium, although it's a big medium. But... what was it like to sell against that again? Because radio was very popular then.
Of course it was.
Well, newspaper was big. Sales, that was some competition, wasn't it?
It was. And then HAS came on the air, 1950, somewhere along in there. And they were on Channel 9, and WAVE was on Channel 5. So later, the commission changed that. They reallocated the whole spectrum because they wanted to encourage UHF television. And we used to say, you'll soon go blind on Channel 9, I think, something like that. But they had problems. But then they built the Talk Tower and improved their signal considerably. And 11 was their home. But
did the Norton family own WAVE then?
Yeah.
So you had the Norton family and the Bingham family then. They were two well-established families.
And we had heard, and I don't know, I heard this from a national sales rep, an old fellow that had been in the business for a long time. Named Free and Peters was the name of the company, and out of New York, and they took care of selling advertising for us nationally, to national advertisers. And this guy claimed that Mr. Bingham and Mr. Norton were pretty good friends, and that he encouraged Norton to build his first radio station, to build WAVE. And this was back when, I think, Jack, and you can confirm this someplace, but that LAP in Lexington, who was originally in Lowell, and then it moved to Lexington. And then HAS came on in 21, I think, 22. And then WAVE came on later. But it was interesting how the two families interconnected in the same city. And you look back today where we don't have a single locally owned station in the whole market.
Big change, yeah.
And how much those folks contributed to this community.
Yeah, both very strong families and very strong community backers.
That's right. But anyway, I got a call from, we'll talk a little bit about the local programming was a backbone then of television. Because, you know, people were making up game shows. And what's interesting to me today, I think the reason for it, is network is not compensating stations today like they used to. And so stations are looking to more local programming because they can make more money on it. And you're starting to see a little initiative from our local stations here on some locally produced programming.
Interesting, right? But you thought they were going to be completely gone because of everything.
That's right. Yeah. But we did everything. I was in a performance one night. All I had to do was just stand there as backdrop. There was a guy in town, Burt Blackwell and George Patterson, were two really good radio guys. And they used to do a Man on the Street show that was just great on radio. And Burt was a marvelous writer. And he would write these plays. And then local folks would put them on. And I was a detective that led somebody in, and then I was to take a place in the background. Well, with my extensive TV experience, there was a file cabinet there that I was supposed to stand by. Well, I put an elbow up on the file cabinet and leaned back like I was going to lean. Well, it wasn't a real wall. And the wall began to waver slightly, but I caught myself. I didn't fall through.
This is live TV there.
Oh, absolutely live.
Right.
I didn't have anything else. But I'm kind of jumping around here. But from there,
you were in sales still. When did you get in management? When did you come?
Well,
was that at WAVE or was that?
No. I went out west. Chief engineer, the R of WHIR, Russell, had gone. Moved. He and the HIR people had fallen out, and so he moved out to Colorado Springs, Colorado, and bought KVOR, a radio station. And then he and another fellow from Pueblo, the two companies got together and applied for a license in the Colorado Springs, TV license. And when was that? Gee, was it 1951 or so? And 52, I guess it was. And so I was employed as a salesperson out there. Jim hired me. We moved out there. And, of course, that's a garden spot of the world.
Yeah,
it really was at that time. And, but we had a lot of problems. Weather was a big, big consideration out there where construction was concerned. So Our legal advisor, everybody's got a Washington attorney, I think they had permission, told them to go ahead and build because we, in the fall, because after that they wouldn't be able to build till spring up in the facilities up on top of Cheyenne Mountain out there. Yeah. And so they went ahead, beautiful facilities, complete with a little apartment for engineers in case they got snowed in or whatever. Well, we got our license, but they said we couldn't use anything we'd already built.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what they call anticipation of a license. They were tough in those days. And,
wow.
Well, they were feeling around. They didn't know what was going on.
All new to them.
And these were both VHF for the stations. I can't remember what channel we were on. But here again, I was in sales, and it was a great place to live. And then Betty's family had some health problems. So we took a vacation in the wintertime, which was kind of a dumb thing to do, where I could attend the Kentucky Broadcasters Association meeting. And I hooked up with a couple of guys there from Harlan, Kentucky. And they owned three stations, Cumberland, Harlan, and one over in Norton, Virginia. So I got a job there to manage the one in Cumberland. And so I'll tell you, we're gypsies in this business. But anyway, we moved to Cumberland. And it was a single owner, single station market. But we had plenty of competition from Harlan and from Whitesburg. Matter of fact, Whitesburg always had a sales team over there trying to sell our customers. And that was a really interesting experience, Jack, because everything in the world happened to us. I mean, not only on the air, but with business and everything else. First of all, the town had a locally owned telephone company. And you didn't need a number. They said, give me Joe Smith's office, you know, one of those. And it was remarkable. Well, he's out to lunch. He'll be back in an hour.
The operator telling
me all of this. And everybody just took it for granted. That's the greatest telephone service
sure,
in the world.
Personal service.
We were there. Well, it doesn't matter. We were there. We had some good times. I'll get to where we were there in a minute. I never managed anything in my life. But the interesting part of this whole deal, how I got the station, I didn't have any money. And so they called me up and they said, we want you to buy a radio station. I said, well, I can't. I've got any money. We'll give you the money. So they gave me the money for a down payment on their radio station. And I thought, well, boy, I'm dead and in heaven. And I filed an application. I filled out the application to send to the FCC. Well, where it says, there was one line in the application, why are you buying this radio station? Well, I said, to make money. That application came back quicker than you could, you know. So I called somebody else that I knew, and they said, you better say something about public service in there. So I refiled, and it was approved. But And then we were there. I'm trying to think where Margaret. Oh, Margaret was born in Louisville. That's right, my second daughter. That's how I measure things when we were at Wave. And in Cumberland, we had a lot of good folks there that were trying to upgrade that community. With Cumberland, Benham, and Lynch. It was a three. They called it the Tri-Cities.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of it coal-oriented. And unions were pretty good then, and most workers had jobs. Not like it is today.
This is in the early to mid-50s now? We're in the early to mid-50s?
Yeah, this was 19... Yeah. So, the coal mines paid off every other Friday. And they called it payday weekend. Payday weekend, our log looked like somebody sliced their wrist. There was so much red on it, you couldn't believe it. Loaded with commercials. But then the other Friday, it was, you know, nothing at all. So I tried to design some program packages that would give us some revenue get it more.
Even it out.
Absolutely. So, and it did. They bought the concept, so we did all right. Well, some sidebars to all this. We would do the football games for Cumberland in Benham because they had the football field that was used by all three communities.
Did they ask you to call them, by the way?
Smart art. I did it. Yes, I did. I learned not to. But the telephone situation, none of us had remote transmitters in those days. They weren't even available, I don't think. But we had to have telephone lines. And so the Lynch telephone service, so Lynch was owned by U.S. Steel and Benham was owned by International Harvester. Lynch phone service was Southern Bell. But to get out of there and to Harlan, they had to go through our local switchboard. Now,
who knows when Ed's going to lunch?
That's right. And I was doing, I forget who they were playing with, but anyway, we were broadcasting from Benham, and I turned around, here's Betty. I said, what are you doing here? What's wrong? She said, do you know you've been broadcasting every long-distance telephone call from Lynch, Kentucky for the last quarter? And I said, no. So she went by, had to get out of the place in her car and go down to the phone company and tell them what had happened because it was only one line. And so she did, and they unplugged us and plugged us where we were supposed to be. But she said, Betty was laughing her head off. She said, you should have heard some of those calls you were broadcasting.
I wondered about that. You talked about a local phone company.
That's right.
You're broadcasting.
That's right.
That's
right. One good thing about it, the locally owned and the guy that ran it, the manager, was a neat fellow. And we'd go to a Rotary Club meeting or something, and they'd say, well, Shadman, can you broadcast this? I said, well, if Charlie will give me the line, I'll go. Charlie said, yeah, I'll volunteer the line, you know.
That's community radio.
It really was.
Sounds like a good time.
So we did. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And
so you eventually sell that station then?
Yeah, we did at a profit.
That's good.
And
the guys gave you the money to buy it, you did it, and then you sold it at a profit.
That's
a good
right.
deal.
Absolutely. Not much, but we got out of there with our shirts. And meanwhile, what made us move, Margaret was in kindergarten. Sue was in the first grade. And Margaret came home and she said, Dad, and Mom said, we've been studying compound words. And Betty, the old English major, said, oh. She said, give me an example. So Margaret said, well, you know, therefore and whereas and right here. I said,
it's
Betty,
time to go.
Betty, that's right. Betty looked at me and I said, we're out of here. And so it took us a little over, maybe 6 or 8 months after that to sell it. But anyway, I thought I was going to go to Henderson, Kentucky, to manage that station there. I knew him, and meanwhile, in all this other stuff, I'd gotten involved with Kentucky Broadcasters and was ended up being secretary treasurer for 4 or 5 years. And during that time, there was a certain maturity. As I say, I was in the second generation genre, if you want to call it that, of broadcasters. And we were, you know, they would, the original decoration, the original bunch, let me put it that way, would go to these meetings and depending on who didn't like who, they ended up in fist fights. So there wasn't a lot of class to this group. And there were, don't get me wrong, there were guys in there that were classy people.
The atmosphere was such.
But the atmosphere was such that...
Well, still a pretty young industry. I mean, you
oh, gosh, yes, it sure was.
Certainly television, but even radio was still a fairly young medium at that time.
Owensboro, Paducah, Henderson, Eastern Kentucky, I can't remember, Ashland, I guess. But they were all... kind of the backbone, Lexington certainly, really trying to get some legislative things done in Kentucky and nationally too. But anyway, I ended up in Tampa, Florida, And that was my experience with African American radio. And the guy that owned the part in Tampa, yeah. And we loved it down there. And my good friend Jack Eberbach was manager, and I was his assistant. Assistant manager.
Is this the middle to late 50s now, or when is this?
Yeah. No. It would be late 50s.
Early 60s.
Early 60s. Okay. And it was a change, certainly, for me. And getting, you're so used to working for nice diction and for classy announcers. Well, these guys are like, they're all over the map. And but great people. I'm not knocking them down. It was just their way. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn. I was a learner, not the teacher. And we were only there maybe 6 months, and Ronceville transferred me back to Louisville. He owned 6 or 7 radio stations. The only general market station he had was in Atlanta. But he had stations in New Orleans and 2 in Florida, Miami and Tampa, Cincinnati, Louisville. So I went up there as general manager. And there again, it was...
Which station was this now?
LOU. And here again, it was an adjustment that I went through. I had an excellent assistant manager, Bill Summers. Bill later became owner of that station and a real mover.
And a real distinguished career here.
Absolutely, he sure did.
And as community leader.
He sure did.
Mm-hmm. Articulate guy, right?
He was. And a good guy on top of everything. He could do anything. And a lot of good stories there. But I think Louisville was in a transition there of trying to get the NAACP working to get businesses integrated. And they also, the lower end of 4th Street at that time, the northmost end of 4th Street, was most of these little credit clothing stores, which actually I felt like kind of preyed. I'm not sure I want to use that word, but they sure took advantage of low-income blacks. Hmm. And I always felt a little guilty running their commercials because they would promise things that they wouldn't deliver on. And
where was this on 4th Street? Where?
Well, they're not there anymore.
Oh, okay.
It's back, it started where, I'd say Jefferson Street North.
Okay, so downtown, right?
Yeah,
downtown.
Oh yeah, right, yeah. Sure was. And then meanwhile, I wasn't with them then, but the government came in and West Muhammad Ali now was all, where all the black businesses were. Mm-hmm. And when urban renewal came in, they just wiped them out. And I often wondered where they all went. It sure hit, I don't think I was still with the station then, but it sure hit that area.
Because that was a major corridor, really. That was a major
corridor. It sure was. And I used to go with Bill occasionally and make calls with him. And these were good businesses, the fellas that were doing real well, and they just had to get out of it. They tried to move some of them, and some of them were successful, but not many. Oh, and I don't say that either. I really don't know, I guess is what I'm trying to say, but there were a lot of guys that didn't make it.
Certainly a change, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Big change. So you were in Louisville to stay then from that time on? Did you go out of town?
No. Now, let me figure here. Where I go?
At WLOU.
While I was here, and then he transferred me back to Florida again.
Oh, okay.
Same station. So that's when we were up here on vacation or something, and Channel 32 was trying to come on the air. And I went over and talked to Holman Wilson, who was the force behind putting together a group to apply for the Channel 32's license. And they were on the air, and a fellow named, what was his name? Didn't matter. I'll have to look it up. A general manager and a great guy. He was had a lot of TV experience. And I, you know, bear in mind, the only TV experience I'd had was at Wave years ago.
As a salesperson.
Yeah. So, but the long story short, I ended up coming back as sales manager at 32. And then the man that was Barry Smith, that's who it was, Barry Smith. Barry was from down around Evansville. And the ownership of Channel 32 was, some of the biggest names in the city, Louisville, Dillman Rash and Bill Cutchins. And one of the owners lived in Evansville, and to make it shorten a little bit, this owner, and I can't remember him at all, got Barry Smith to come back and run another station he was involved in. So that opened it up for me. And this was a real opportunity for me, but also a heck of a job, because we not only had no audience, we didn't even have TV sets able to receive us.
Sure, your UHF station.
UHF station.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. So we had two priorities. Number one, get some money in, but number two, promoting the station to where people would go out and buy a little box so they could pick up UHF. Well, the FCC came in then and they said manufacturers have X number of years to get all channel sets on the market. Well, that helped us tremendously. But we were supposed to be ABC affiliated, and ABC would offer their programming to Wave or HAS before they'd offer them to us. But we had no audience.
Yeah.
You know,
I can't
blame them. But we got some, I had a marvelous staff over there, I really did. And I think there were 31 of us eventually.
Mm.
And Bill, who am I thinking about? Doesn't matter. We had Bob Taylor, who was production manager.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, he worked at HAS for a while.
Sure did.
He came over there with me. And Bob and an excellent sales staff, you had to be. Woody Delaney was sales manager, and he'd come from Wave, and he was also the son-in-law of Archie Cochran, one of the owners. And Archie Cochran called me up one day at work. He said, well, you've hired my son-in-law. He said, if he doesn't work, kick his ass out of there. Now, Archie was that kind of a guy. He was a marvelous person.
Yeah.
Marvelous guy. And I don't know how he got into it, but sometime he said, did I ever tell you about the time that I bombed Miami Beach? I said, no, sir. He said, yeah, I sure don't hear this. Anyway, he was a bombardier in World War
I. Oh, my God.
And he trained in Miami. And they would bomb the beach with sandbags. They had no equipment. You just go by gas and by golly, drop sandbags to learn how to drop bombs. So, but he was all business and a great help. And they all were. They all were. But the long and the short of that was that we began to make a niche in the market and making some money. Matter of fact, we were turning more profit than HAS when I came over there. And with 32 people.
Yeah, overhead makes a big difference.
Ken Rowland came on board, and that upgraded our news considerably.
He'd been a newsman, a radio newsman? Had he been a radio
newsman? Yeah, at KLO Radio.
Yeah.
And but I don't think it was his first TV job. I can't remember. And then, of course, eventually we got Diane Sawyer as a weather person.
Mm-hmm.
But that station was fun. It really was, because we knew we were the underdogs, and everybody pulled together to make it good. And it was really fun. We eventually became so competitive. In those days, you know, I sound like I'm reading the Bible, but in those days, the FCC would give out financial information for the market.
Oh, so
there were X number of dollars spent in Louisville on television advertising. And we got copies there. Well, I buddied up with somebody over at Wave. And so we knew what HAS, we'd take ours, combine it, and subtract it, and that's what HAS did. And it was too bad because they had the facility and everything, but it was a good companionship that we had for both of us, and helped me an awful lot to know where we were and how
was
it.
Was Wave Television the dominant factor?
Oh boy, was it ever!
They were the dominant.
Gosh, factor. I mean they were, and they were. I'm trying to think. Well, I'm sure for years and years. But they were a much better managed TV and radio company than HAS was. But there are reasons for that, and I understand that. But it was an interesting time. And
how long were you at LKY, Channel 32?
7 years.
Really?
I came there in 62 or 63 and left there in 1970 to go to WHAS. But then eventually, I'm kind of hopscotching here, they decided they wanted to sell the station because Channel 41 was getting ready to come on the air, and they did. These guys were investors, and they were in it for the bucks, and that's fine.
And the FCC approved that.
Yeah, oh sure.
In it for the bucks, I mean.
Yeah,
you had a problem with that.
But yeah, the FCC would approve anything that had UHF on it. They were so anxious, and they were right. But anyway, they sold the station to Sonderling Broadcasting, which was primarily a African-American radio company. Hmm. Not ownership, but program. And they had the big station in Memphis that had about 60% of the audience in Memphis, which their population was well over 50% in Memphis, I'm sure. But anyway, they came in, they were just starting to buy some TV stations. And they wanted me to be thinking about moving to New York. And Betty and I talked it over. She wanted to go, and I said, I don't.
Yeah.
So I didn't know these people well enough for us to pick up the family and move out of town. And
take roots and all that, yeah.
The one thing I always tried to do is, who am I working for? And will they listen to me? Will I listen to them? That was the important thing. Mm.
Okay.
And anyway, I forget how. I met Sy McKinnon and somewhere socially. And
now, Cy is big with the Binghams and
newspaper. And he asked me would I be interested in moving. They were looking to early retire or do something with Vic Scholes, and he was then the GM, the president, and so forth. And it worked out, and I had no idea what I was getting into. But albeit, it was good relationship. We did some. I had to do some things. That,
1970. That was a transition time, though, in television,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Sure.
And radio and television.
Absolutely.
A lot of employees had been there, and you're making some transitions. Talk about that a little bit.
Is
1970. Is
this? Yeah. One? Well, Hugh Barr was just a second coming, as far as I was concerned. He was there before I was at HAS.
He was the program director,
right,
of radio.
That's right. I'm sorry.
HAS radio, huh?
PD, and Hugh was with it. I mean, he knew what was going on in that business.
He was already trying to carve things out for the radio.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We were still putting on farm programming. I think in the Louisville market, the only 50-kilowatt clear channel station in the state, mm-hmm. we were probably running fifth.
Yeah.
And or sixth, somewhere along in there. The FM was classical music. That was 150th, I think,
yeah.
in the market. I think, I don't.
That's kind of the way the Bingham family wanted. Well, their approach up to that point anyway had not necessarily been
right.
A big emphasis on profit and radio and television. Had it more community service and everything? Or?
All of, you know, it was service. You're right on the money there. But all of a sudden, they woke up.
They had to.
And it was costing them a pretty buck. And it was interesting. I had Betty and I had lunch over to McKinnon's with the Binghams one day, and before I actually started, and I thought, well, I can say he's gone. He told me, he said, if you come to work for us, he said, the one thing I want you to do is get rid of TBRV. He said, it's an embarrassment
to me.
Which
was an institution at that point, but...
Which he said is...
Well, tell me what TBRV was.
Well, TBRV was... Well, I think everybody knows what TBRV was. But TBRV was the locally originated program that had local talent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on television, thank you.
And, they didn't do it on radio also, did they?
No.
They did it in simulcast,
mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
And it was done by
Randy Atcher
and
Tom Brooks. Mm-hmm.
And... it was, for a local show.
Milton Metz had a part on it, I think, didn't he? He was Milton Metz was a villain or something. I
Milton
think.
Metz was everything on WHAS sooner or later. And, great guy.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, and we had to get rid of, we decided to get rid of the Hayloft Hoedown, too, because we were getting killed in the ratings. We couldn't sell it. And... We tried local programming with Milton and.
Now those two had been very popular at one time.
Oh
they?
Yes,
very,
absolutely,
very
sure.
This time in the early 70s, they're starting.
Oh gosh, yes, but with the, the demographics changed too, and new things, new exciting. This is when all the, Merv Griffin shows and all those talk
syndication
shows.
Syndication type.
Absolutely,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Became.
And, it was pretty tough competition.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
We were just getting clobbered. And, of course, I was at WAVE when George Patterson, program director, he came, asked all the sales guys, there's three of us, NBC is going to start a new program early in the morning. They wanted us to carry it. Said, it's called Today.
Oh, my goodness.
And we said, I said, and the other guys did too, yeah, we could sell that early time. And that's what...
Little did you know where that
was.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. It was a great innovative, creative time in broadcast television.
So you have to work on getting rid of TBRV and Hayloft Hotel
and
other thing. Were there other elements there too?
Well, yeah, we had to let I think it was 20-25 people go or early retire. Most of those who had been there a while were early retired.
It's pretty much. Again, a Bingham attitude, wasn't it? I mean, about they were very kind to people, and
didn't want people
to be hurt badly. So.
That's right.
How was that? How that must have been tough for you.
Well,
it was a business decision, of course, though.
It had to be done, and I think a lot of people knew that they were surplus, and we had people in the promotion department that. I don't know what they were doing. They'd fire out these releases, but you very seldom see them in the newspaper. So I don't know. It was just a tough thing to do. And I think, like, in hindsight, I don't know why in the world I ever left Channel 32.
Well, you had a big influence on HAS, though. That was an important time then.
But Radio Barg handled that like a pro, and he just...
What kind of guy was he? What was he like to work with?
Oh,
I hear his name, of course, I worked for him, but I hear his name pop up all the time.
Oh, he was a great guy. Very, very amenable, very smart.
Knew where he was going, though, didn't he?
Absolutely. He knew music better than anybody
else. And how
to
get there.
Pardon? Yeah.
He knew what he was going and how to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And he put together the elements of what became just a major, major radio station.
Absolutely. But he and I, and I'll take credit for this, because of his, we colluded against the Binghams to get rid of the classical music.
Oh, really?
So, bear with me. We were bidding on the University of Louisville basketball rights, and Wave and I, 32 wasn't bidding, they may have been. And so we put together a bid and took it out to instructions said, take this to our accounting office. Well, we did. And the day they opened the bids, Peck Hickman called me. He said, why didn't you bid?
He's a basketball coach at U of L.
And I said, but we did. Well, where's your bid? I said, it's in your accounting office where you told me to get it. He said, oh, my Lord. Well, he had already given the bid to Wave, but he had never seen ours. So he called me back and he said, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I said, forget the television. Give us the FM rights. So that was the foot in the door to get rid of the classical. Prince Bowden was ready to kill me.
Prince Bowden was the program.
Program director. Thank you for helping me identify all these people. Yeah. But that's what we did. And that's where I went down and told, got Van Vance to come on. And
he gives you a lot of credit for his entry into sports and full time and all that.
He Van's a good guy, and I don't not that other down there weren't good guys. They all were very talented man, but devoted to what he was doing. He really was. He loved sports, still does. Mm-hmm. So that kind of helped a little bit. Then NBC was starting an all-news network. This was a thing to do, you know.
For radio.
For radio. And so I approached Barry. I said, can't we change this all over and pick up the NBC News? Well, he said, yeah.
Classical music, the news was okay right. At that point, yeah.
Yep. And so we picked up the NBC News for the FM station. I think that's right. I think that's what we did. Well, then the NBC News folded. It didn't make it. But Barr, in the back of his mind, he said, country, country, country.
Is
that's
that
what
right?
He had for the FM.
Wow.
And that's how it got started on Wave Radio.
Yeah, so
I mean, HAS.
Made a transition, and so when the news failed, there it was. I talked with Jerry David Malloy the other day, and he told me how Coyote Calhoun came about. Did you have dealings with Coyote? Was that
no, I was after I was gone.
Oh, that was after you were gone. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they called me over at the office one day and said, this isn't working out and you're gone.
Really?
So Barry Jr. and Sy McKinnon. I don't know if you want to go into all this.
What is it they were, because things were going along pretty well, or what was the problem?
I don't know.
Huh?
To this day, I don't know.
That was a surprise to you, then, obviously.
Well, it was, and I was, the 5 years I was there, I was never once reviewed saying that I was doing good, bad, or indifferent. And it was a disappointment, it was a shock. And because I thought we were rolling on pretty good. I know Cyanide had some issues about different parts of the industry that he didn't understand or I didn't understand. I don't know what it was. But
now, Sy McKinnon was sort of the,
he was the
right-hand man of
the family.
Now, Barry Sr., of course, was still pretty influential at this time, wasn't he? Or was
no.
Barry Jr.? Was Barry
no,
Jr.
Junior, you know? Barry Jr. was. Okay. He had the interest in broadcast. Well, of course, he'd worked for NBC Network.
Oh, I forgot about that,
And I don't know what happened. I really, in retrospect, I've none of my business what happened, except that I was. They were generous with the separation, and the parting was not sweet. But we made amends later, when I'd retired. But the thing that I really missed too. At HAS was my activity with the Kentucky broadcasters. Because I asked McKinnon, I said, I'd like to continue this work. And he put the kibosh on. He said,
really?
No. He said, we need you here. I don't want you doing that. So, and yet they were such big promoters for the newspaper folks. They sent 5 or 10 people up to the.
But nothing with broadcasting. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, so I had to back off. I'd go to meetings, but I mean, I wasn't on the board anymore or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, how you want me to keep going?
Well, let's talk just a little bit more about your HAS experience. Yep. And what's wrong with them? Who Barr was there as the radio program director. Mm-hmm. Who was involved in television?
Me.
I mean, as far as program directors and people like that, was that the Dick Sweeney?
Oh, Dick Sweeney. Yes, Dick you're Sweeney. Right. Sweeney was there, and.
But you were over radio and television, basically. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You concentrated probably a little more on radio, television, because you had Barr over there. But
and
you were
also
over radio and television.
When I got there, I came somewhere. I kept all those figures, but they weren't doing worth a hoot. I mean, mm-hmm. we just not making any money. And Sweeney was good. And I had the utmost respect for him, and I like to think I taught him some stuff, but. He didn't know what a rating book was, and it may not mean much to people, but you can't be in the TV business without a rating book, right, and they had never subscribed.
A different era there, or back when.
Yeah, they had never subscribed, right. And another basic problem with AM was certain areas of nighttime radio, the rates were higher than televisions.
Hmm.
Nobody's listening to the radio. But don't ask me why it was never changed. But we immediately changed the rate card and then began to sell out radio, too. Because at that time, we were in no position to raise rates when we're still broadcasting all the old farm programming, nobody listening. But once Hugh got to work and we got a number or two, well, boy, we pushed them right on up. So I think we turned radio around in about a little over a year, I think. I still got those.
Yeah, when I came in 73, you guys had
Oh, yeah.
You were doing really good. You turned it into from the sleeping giant into the cuddly giant,
that's
as
right.
you like to call
that's
it.
Right.
He was very involved in the community and doing
that's
all kinds
right.
of things. Yeah.
That's right. I talk to him quite often.
Do you really?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I want to get a phone number for you, because
sure.
I want to call and talk with him a little
well,
bit.
Oh, good.
So that'd be great.
Good. Yeah, good. He'd love to hear from
yeah.
me.
Yeah, yeah.
He lost his wife.
Really?
Recently, yeah. Wow. Over the last year or so. I've been trying to get him up here. I've offered him a room and everything else, if he would.
Well, maybe he'll come up for one of these. That'd be good.
That'd be, yeah.
And you and I can team up on him and get him
sure.
talking a little bit. That'd
sure,
be
that'd be great.
That'd be good. So you had some, you came in at a time and helped kind of shape things up, and then they said, here's the door. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, as I say, we went to Florida, back to Florida, and bought a little radio station in Haines City, Florida. My goodness, it's the worst decision I ever made. But during the ascertainment part of this, where you go around, you visit people in the community and say, what is the town doing and what can you see to it? Am I talking too much?
No, you're fine. You're fine. Sure
I got a hold of this lawyer that was born and raised in Haines City. He said, why are you coming to a culturally deprived poverty pocket? He was right. But we had a lot of fun down there. And one time, I can't remember how, we were doing a basketball game. And it was just a daytime station, so we tape them and play them back the next day. And people always, I don't care how old, how young, they always like to hear themselves on the radio. So anyway, I looked around. I was doing the play-by-play. Betty was keeping statistics for me. Bill was playing and Jim was working the PA system. So I never thought, well, we all got in the game free at least. But anyway.
Did you get some popcorn too?
Yeah, that's
oh,
right.
That's good.
We had a lot of fun. Betty, I tell you one story that I really. She became news director, and she was in her seventh heaven. Two things: we weren't there a week, then she had this woman's program going, and first thing she did every morning was to call the hospital to see what new babies were born. Well, the first day she called, the nurse said, "Oh, no, you just call on Thursdays. That's when the babies come." Betty said, "Oh." Well, physicians were forcing labor on Thursday.
Wow.
It wasn't 20 minutes, and the hospital called back and said, scratch that, they're delivering babies every day now. And so just, you know, in one phone call, you made a change in that community.
Interesting.
One really good story, I thought. We filed with AP. There was an itinerant worker. We were, this was right in the heart of Florida at that time, Orange Country.
Mm-hmm. And, a little south of Orlando over in that area.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Central Florida. And he went into the police station and said, I'm hungry. Can you help me with some food? He was, you know. And they said, no, but there's a church up here about, it was over in Davenport, Iowa, I think. And I was 6 miles away. And he went up there and knocked on the door, and the door opened. Well, it was, he went to the lower door, didn't go to the front door of the church, and went into the basement, the refrigerator, and he opened it, fixed himself a bologna sandwich. Well, the pastor comes down, and he said, don't you move. He went back upstairs, came down with a pistol, and said, you're under arrest. And he called the Haines City Police. Police said, we sent him over there. I'm filing a complaint against him. I want him in jail right now. Well, this was, Jack, it was about, I don't know, not quite a week before Thanksgiving. So this was a hell of a story.
Yeah.
So we filed it with AP, and or Betty did, and all of a sudden this guy is, they put it on the national wire. He's getting Thanksgiving offers from Seattle, Washington, from all over Tennessee or any place, you know, all over the country. And the pastor insisted on, you know, following up on the prosecution of this guy. So I was going to work one day. I was downtown on the way out to the station. I just stopped by the police station. I said, well, how's our friend? What friend? I said, the guy that you sent over to the church. Well, we didn't do anything like that. They answered one of his calls and told, they acted as helping him find somebody that would take him, put him in the car with them, and we never had the case.
Is that right?
Yeah. So wow. we didn't follow up on that, but we don't get the cops. But they were so pissed at this guy.
Yeah.
I don't
blame
him either. He was, he really wasn't too good a preacher.
That's amazing, ministering Thanksgiving.
Well, that, you know, you never know with small town radio what you're going to get.
Well, you've had a great career.
I have.
And still doing some things. You're still doing things, company broadcasting, and are you doing some consulting or anything these days?
No. I had two experiences that I was proud of and did see. I went to finish up the thing with HAS. Sold the radio station. Went to work for a little company that had a TV station down in Fort Myers, and I knew him and known him, and eventually got a call from General Electric in Nashville. And long story short, well, one other thing, Don Faust was the name of, he ran all the GE stations, and he said, well, you didn't give me a reference from HAS, and I said, well, you know they can't be, John. I said, Don, I said, they will call Cy McKinnon. So he did, and he called me back laughing. He said, you know what he said? I said, no, he said he made a mistake. And I said, well, I could have told him that. But anyway,
that's good to know.
I had that job. Ostensibly, GE was selling out all their TV. And they had a black buyer for Nashville from a black insurance company over in North Carolina somewhere. And it didn't go through. So I stayed there and then eventually took over the radio, AM and FM. And I really enjoyed working for them. And then Bob Morse called me one day and said, you want to come back and run Louisville Productions? Well, Betty and I were both a little homesick, so we said, sure. So we came on back.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you were back there in that.
Yeah.
What year was that? That was when what years was that? You were there at Louisville Productions. What year was that?
Well, Hugh was still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was...
In the late 70s, middle to late 70s?
No, it was up 80.
Up in the 80s?
Yeah, 81 to... Now, wait a minute. No, 83, yeah. 83 or 84, because yeah. I was in Nashville 2 or 3 years, and then I retired from there, from HAS. When Bingham sold, well, you know when he sold it.
Yeah, 85.
Yeah. And... but the two things that I really enjoyed doing was, one... I had a call from Channel 15 when they let their manager go. And I babysat that transfer of license to KET from Jefferson County. And that was interesting. I'd never done anything like that before. And mainly closing it down. And one experience we had that I was really a nail-biter. Help me with who was the general manager of radio, and I can't remember his name. He came up through the sales department, the last guy they had.
Bob Shearer.
Bob Shearer, yeah. Thank you. Well, Bob, I called him, and I knew they were looking because the new owners of the television had said they wanted the space. And I said, Bob, come out and look at this building. This is when this was the old GE building that Channel 15 had bought.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the transfer had already taken place, but the corporation was still going because they owned all this property they had to get rid of. So long story short, he signed up for the thing.
This
he
is got AJS Radio, yeah. Yeah. And of course, at that time, radio and television had been together forever. And
that's right. That's right. And so they had their own building. Well, we got down to the closing on this thing. And the bank had been so patient with us. It was $1,300,000 mortgage on that place, and or thereabouts. And I went to the closing. They gave me a check for $1,300,000. I put it in my pocket and ran as fast as I could to the bank.
Goodness, sure.
Because the bank was going to foreclose that afternoon.
Wow.
Or the next day, whatever.
Wow.
So, but boy, I've never held a check like that in my life. And the other thing that I got involved in was the International Executive Service Corps. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Well, it's a volunteer organization, and I never found out who funded that or started. I suspect GE did, had some hands in it, had a part of it. But when the Iron Curtain busted up, this group was formed to help businesses that had never been in the free enterprise system to operate and help them. So I applied and was sent, Betty and I were sent to Kharkov, Ukraine, and lived with a Russian family for, I think it was 5 weeks. And we had the time of our lives.
I'm sure.
It was just great. And they owned an AM and FM and a little newspaper that they published. And had no idea of what competition was. They just, they would meet with an advertiser, all the stations that were there. They had 4 or 5 stations in Kharkov. They just divide up the budget. I said, no, you want it all. I said, it's the American way. But then when we got back home, I applied to the U.S. Commerce Department. And Senator McConnell was helpful in getting this. But anyway, they had a program set up where they could come over here and visit our stations. So the long story was that I got KBA to sign off on what they were supposed to do. And so they threw in a little money, which they immediately got back. But they lived with us for 6 weeks. So we visited 18 radio and TV stations in the state.
Very nice.
And that was fun.
Yeah.
It really was.
I opened it then too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you've had a rich experience.
I have.
And who knows what's going to happen next. You know?
That's true. That's true.
You're looking around for opportunity still? Or?
Oh, no. I'm volunteering with
Mail
and hospice now.
Yeah. So good. Some great stories.
Well, I didn't know it. Good Lord, I talked an hour and a half.
That's fine. That's not a problem. That's what it came out for. Well, thank you very much, Ed.
Well, you're welcome.
And we'll look forward to, if we need to add more, we'll add more.
Good.
Thanks.
Good. Thank you, daughter.